There's a lot of people on this call right here listening to us live, and I have to give a huge shout out to our sister circle and our brothers who are our allies. It's so incredible during this last year to realize we needed each other more than we thought we did. Yes. And as leaders of organizations and women leaders, we absolutely rise by lifting others. But when you have a network of trust, you're able to do that heavy lifting together and be the role models that our young girls need, especially today, to know that anything's possible.
Welcome to episode 200 of the Teachers on Fire podcast. I'm your host, Tim Cavey, and today I want to bring you another edition of the Teachers on Fire Roundtable. These are live streamed conversations meant to warm your heart, spark your thinking, and ignite your professional practice. You can view and interact with the show live every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific, 10 a.m. Central, and 11 a.m. Eastern on the Teachers on Fire channel on YouTube. Today's roundtable is titled, Five Latina Superintendents, Building Equity During Times of Crisis. Enjoy. So excited to be joined this morning by five women, five fantastic leaders and superintendents of school districts in California and Texas now. We'll get to that here in a few minutes. But first, let's start by introducing my guests, starting with Angelica Ramsey. Would you introduce yourself?
Good morning, everyone. Angelica Ramsey, proud superintendent of the Midland Independent School District, previous superintendent of the Pleasant Valley School District in California.
Rebecca.
Good morning. I am Dr. Rebecca Andrade, and I'm the superintendent of Salinas City Elementary School District.
Welcome. And Zandra.
Hi there. I'm Zandra Galvan, the proud superintendent of Greenfield Union School District in Monterey County, California.
All right. And Lori.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Lori Gonzalez. I'm the proud superintendent of the El Naido Elementary School District in Merced County, Central Valley represented here.
And Maria.
Hello, my name is Maria Martinez-Poulin, superintendent of Whittier City School District.
All right. Well, thank you all for joining me. I'm very mindful that we've got some PhDs and EdDs around the table. And so we're going to dispense with that. But just I need to recognize there's a lot of education here around the roundtable in this particular show. I'm going to jump right into this because we've got a full lineup of questions and I've got so many more for these ladies. So let's start with this one. Let's honor your communities. What is one thing that you're especially proud of in your district? I want to give some shout outs. And Maria, I know you were up late last night, so thank you for joining us early this morning. But tell us one thing that you're proud of right now in your district.
I am super proud of the Whittier community and their sense of resiliency. So during the pandemic, we were especially hit hard with positive COVID cases. And there has been a lot of suffering, a lot of the impact with loss of life, a loss of work, and our children have had beautiful families come forward and support them. Our teachers have been supported by our community. And one thing I heard at our board meeting last night was a great interest by our community to say, please continue to make safety and wellness a priority as we come back to in-person instruction. And so that's what we were doing last night. We were working on a plan to return to in-person. The priority from the community was we want to make sure that our teachers know that we appreciate what they have done for the last 12 months. And that as we come back, that safety is a protocol that we continue to follow, and that classified and management also get that special recognition for what they have done. And I'm especially proud of who they are because of that strong knit community value. And so I'm just delighted by their spark of community.
Lori, over to you. What is one thing that jumps out to you when you think about your district?
Gosh, to narrow it down to one is so difficult. So this is my second year as superintendent of El Naido, and I can tell you the changes that we've made in the short amount of time on top of, you know, dealing with COVID. But I, you know, if I have to narrow it down, I would say it's trust, the trust in my staff and the trust in the families of El Naido. To be in the position that we are, you know, dealing with COVID and what that brought to all the families there. And the idea that they trusted us enough, we have been open, safely open since September. Currently, we have about 88% of our kids on campus. And so that has just brought forth the importance of communication, the importance of trust, the importance of the fact that, you know, everyone knows that this is a difficult thing to deal with, but the student's education is top priority. And so that in and of itself is really what warms my heart, is the idea that people have trusted someone that's new to the district, that knows that they want best what's for kids. And then I have to give a complete shout out. The community came out in groves last year. For the first time since 1970, we passed 2 GEO bonds in the amount of $6.8 million. And for a district the size of El Nido, it is significant. So again, it just goes to show that community involvement, community commitment, and the love that they have for their children and for their, the importance of education for them is high priority. And for that, to me, is bar none the best. It beats all.
Wow. Those are some positive highlights worth celebrating. Zandra, yeah. Over to you.
Yeah. So I echo what my powerful soups here, my sister soups are saying in terms of the resiliency and the trust. And I'm going to take it to also saying about the relationships that we develop, and because our communities won't trust us to lead this work without a solid relationship. And so it's critical for us to be at the ground level, just really making connections with people from our teacher staff to our classified mm-hmm. staff. In California, we have a large organization of our classified labor partners who have been preparing those meals and distributing Chromebooks mm-hmm. and really getting out in the front lines. And so I can't thank them enough. And because this is a Teachers on Fire podcast, our teachers are so phenomenal. And mm-hmm. one of the things we started when we initiated this, and you're right, it's the 1 year anniversary today when we went on shelter in place right here in California and in my district. And so knowing the work that people have done over the last year has just been amazing. And one of the core values that I'll share with you that we have here in Greenfield is we will not let each other fail. And that is so critical to our mission and our being able to do things together. We are stronger together. We are better together. And when a teacher or a classified union member or an administrator or a parent, anyone needs support in our community, we step in to help them because we won't let you fail. And that's one major thing that has just really led us through this time.
That's a beautiful sentiment as well. Absolutely. That solidarity is critical. Rebecca, over to you.
Wow. So yes to the resilience, the persistence, the trust, the relationships, and I would add adaptability. Mm-hmm. It's so amazing the way that our community has adapted to the times. And we continue. This is the next phase. We're at the return to in-person phase, and we are yet again adapting. So thank you to every one of our staff that really just made those changes, that moved from this was my job and now I'm being a safety agent because this is what is needed for our students and for our families. And just a shout out to just the community at large. I mean, we in Salinas, we're the essential workers, not just the educators, but our ag workers who are feeding our nation and who have just continued and do not stop. And we're just so grateful that the vaccines are now available to our teachers, our educators, but also to our ag workers. So we're so, so grateful for everything that is happening.
Last but not least, Angelica, and I'm very mindful to all of my Latina guests and Spanish-speaking audience members. I am doing a terrible job of pronunciation, so I apologize in advance.
You're doing a great job. You said Angelica beautifully. I want to echo everything that my hermana said and add one piece, and that's like the heart and soul of what we do. I'm so proud of our students. Since last year, their resilience, their passion for learning, they did not quit. And when people said that schools were closed, learning didn't stop. And I can say, you know, transitioning here to Midland, Texas, being able to go into classrooms from preschool all the way to high school, students abiding by our wearing of masks, keeping their physical distance, washing their hands, doing everything so that they can have a sense of normalcy. Our students here have been able to participate in their visual and performing arts, in their athletic events, in their academic events. And it's because of the fire that our students have. And the reason why every single one of us here gets up every single morning, right? It's our why. And so if I'm going to say the one thing I'm the most proud of, I'm the most proud of the way our students have handled this entire pandemic from start to now and really shown us the grace and compassion and empathy that we need to have with one another and with ourselves. So definitely our
absolutely.
You said a lot that was good for my heart. I love how you mentioned Students on Fire. I've talked about that needs to be another podcast.
Yeah.
So someone out there listening, maybe that's up to you to get that one going. But I want to talk about, this one seems so timely. This week we marked International Women's Day. So this is great timing. I can't take the credit for that. That's sort of the way it worked out. But what does it mean to see more women in places of leadership in education? And we know that a lot of work still needs to be done. Angelica, back to you.
Yeah, so I am the first female superintendent of Midland ISD. And for me, that's huge. They talk to me and they ask me, what does that mean? And a part of me makes me extremely proud. Another part of me makes me sad. It's sad that it's 2021 and we're still having firsts. But really, the most important piece to me is kind of going back to students, visiting classrooms. I went into a class, I think it was third grade, here in town, and going into the classroom, and the teacher stops because she wants to come over, and she asks the students if she knows who I am. And they knew that the superintendent was coming. They don't know exactly what the superintendent does. And so she explained to them, you know how there's the principal? Well, she's the principal of all the principals. A little girl that looks like me looked up at me and she said, and she's a girl.
Yay.
And that is why we do what we do. And that's for me to be a female superintendent, and why it's so important, not only for the little girl, but the little boy that was sitting right across from her that said, you're the boss of the bosses.
Yeah.
I love it. And then that's important, I think, for me, of being a female leader.
Absolutely.
So good. So yeah. Good.
Yeah.
Others, Rebecca, your thoughts on that question. What does it mean to you? And in your view, what still needs to be done here?
You know, gender equity is so important. And I think it does make a difference. And I just want to say that for the first time, at least in my cabinet, we are all women. And that's the first time that I have seen it in any district that I've been working in. So I'm just really proud of the women that are leading, that are taking the courage to do what is necessary, as well as our brothers who are out there, but the support and the ability to just continue to see that if we do it through a gender equity lens, that if we look at our policies and our structures, that they are more opportunities, and that we have the ability to help empower more women. One of the things that I like to say is that we rise by lifting each other. And that is what I see in this group, in my sister circle. And that is so true. We rise together, but we rise by lifting each other. And I feel it every week. I feel it every day in our sister circle. So I'm just very appreciative of that energy.
There's a sense of momentum, right, that comes with this group and the solidarity and the encouragement mm-hmm. that obviously you already draw mm-hmm. from each other. And sorry, someone was going to add something right there.
I just want to echo that. And I just want to say there's a lot of people on this call right here listening to us live. And I have to give a huge shout out to our sister circle and our brothers who are our allies. It's so incredible during this last year to realize we needed each other more than we thought we did. Yes. And as leaders of organizations and women leaders, we absolutely rise by lifting others. But when you have a network of trust, you're able to do that heavy lifting together and be the role models that our young girls need, especially mm-hmm. today, to know that anything's possible and you can be whatever you dream. And so I have to give a shout out to our sister circle out there. These ladies right here are my sisters, but it goes beyond these sister soups who have made it to the top of an organization and have just really taken incredible responsibility for the students that we serve. I mean, it's just amazing to have on these shoulders the responsibility, but the absolute pleasure and honor to lead our districts. And so love these girls, but I also love all the principals out there and all the teachers out there and our brothers and sisters in California. We have a CALSA organization, California Association of Latino Superintendents and Administrators. We're all part of that. We're all members. And so many are here with us today. And that's why Timmy sees so much Spanish there in the thing, because that's our natural. We're just so encompassing as family and our Latino culture throughout, you know? But also just the amount of people that support each other during this time. As a female superintendent in an organization, as I mentioned, it's a responsibility because every single decision that we make impacts someone. And we can't take that lightly. As a classroom teacher, every decision you make about making sure a student is in your class when it's time for distance learning or checking on them in the home to make sure they're having breakfast or they're, you know, completing that assignment, that takes an incredible amount of responsibility. And so for that, and especially during this month of Women's History, Present, and Future Month, we are so excited to open doors. And these girls right here will continue to open doors for fellow females. And I like to joke, we wear stilettos because we're Latinas. And so I'm going to take that stiletto and I'm going to pop that door open. I'm going to let lots more in.
Lori, do you feel like the situation is improving? I mean, it feels very well documented that for a long time, it's sort of been that glass ceiling and that the upper echelons have been dominated by men. Do you feel like that is starting to change?
You know, I've broken a couple ceilings. And so I'd say yes. So, you know, the reality is this, that we have to make our way through. You know, it's about what you bring to the table. And so, you know, we can't just say it's going to be there. It's going to be something that's available because regardless of the situation, it is about what you are and what you bring to the table. And so we pride ourselves not just on the fact that we've gotten to this position, but that we're continuous learners, that we're continually trying to do our best for our students, that we're continually trying to see what can we bring to our communities. And so it is not just the fact that we've, you know, we've gotten here. It's the fact that we've done things along the way to be able to get here. Are there more need? Absolutely, there's more need. And I would say the fact that we work together to be able to consolidate our efforts is so important. And I think that's the one thing about leadership that tends to be that fear. It could be potentially a reason why things happen is because you believe that you're on your own or you believe you have to do everything on your own. And I will tell you that that is not what it is. It used to be such a competitive nature. And now it's about let's work collaboratively together. It's almost like we have our own PLC, so to speak, in that we work together so that we don't feel alone, so that we feel like we can give what's best for our students and for our community and for our district. So is there more to be done? Absolutely. Can it be done? Absolutely. But you've got to get, I personally, as a female, one thing that I feel has to be done is really learn on your own, learn, you know, the position, and then you can take that leap. And move forward, because that's the other part about it is that we have to be unafraid to take that leap. And it is possible.
Maria, any final thoughts to add to that idea of bringing more ladies into those superintendent and leadership positions?
Yes, thank you for the opportunity. I conducted research at USC in regards to the female superintendency role, and there is a lack of parity. So we do need to work together to increase the numbers of women in the boardroom. And it starts with building each other up. Just as I heard our sisters here say, we need to bring them in, support them. And if we can ask our brothers to also help us, help our board members to recognize the value in having women at the helm is so very important. And parity in pay, parity in numbers, significant. And we see that there is a great number of women joining the ranks of the superintendency. There's still, we still see that women represent superintendent roles in urban districts, in smaller districts. And we would like to see a greater opportunity of women reach out in the suburbs and reach out in other districts as well. But I think it's important for us to note that it happens when we reach out and build each other up. And so giving each other that opportunity to be leaders in the district, to go to conferences, to share resources. And when we have great leaders who are not afraid to have other people achieve, then I think we have that great opportunity. And the women here on this panel are a great representation of that. The women, and I see a lot of comments by people that also are a part of that. So this momentum of building up leadership capacity, people of color and leadership capacity. That is significant. Go out there and as leaders, target women of color, build up their capacity, help them to bloom as leaders in the superintendency, and open the door, escort them into achievement so that children who look like us can say, I can be there soon. I could also be a superintendent. I can also be a doctor of education. And I think that's what it's all about, because we want our children, our families to have opportunity and becoming a superintendent, supporting other people. Perhaps they don't want to be superintendents, but perhaps they want to be directors. Perhaps they want to be something else. And that's what we do. We offer that opportunity to achieve. And again, the panel here is representative of that. And if you get a chance to follow us on Facebook, on Twitter, all of us are just believers that rise together, and there's no competitiveness here. We're all about building each other up, sharing the resources.
The overwhelming theme here is look out for one another, right? And, mm-hmm. and extend that helping hand. Yeah. Don't treat it as this solitary journey. There's a lot of community to be found. Rosa, thank you for joining us on Facebook. Rosalba on YouTube. Jenna on LinkedIn asks, I'm wondering how these leaders maintain their occupational and emotional wellness. I'm hoping to get there, Jenna, so stay tuned for that. Yeah. But next up on a related theme, I want to talk about equity, because I know it's a passion for the ladies around this table. How do you see your role in building equity for all learners across your communities? Maria, let's go back to you on that one.
So I think it's important to look at children and their achievement, to look at capacity in the district. And so for us, started connecting, making sure everyone had devices, making sure everyone had Wi-Fi. And then we looked at learning and looked at relationships, because we want to start with children who feel safe. Want to make sure that our staff felt safe. And then we go on to building the rigor, making sure that they are creative, that they can innovate. But for us, when we look at Whittier City, we represent a community that has 70% that qualify for free and reduced lunch. And so when they were not able to come to the campus, we needed to quickly deploy opportunities to pick up grab and go meals, to make sure that they had resources to complete projects at home, that they had the opportunity, if they needed counseling, to get that counseling. And so it has been truly a team effort and a labor of love. And so the teachers have been instrumental in letting us know who needs resources. The teachers have been significant in saying, we need more of this, we need less of that. And I am just humbled again by the great work that happens through our teachers that went beyond standards, because we had to start with making sure that we were okay. And once we felt that we were okay, then we could do everything else. And we started by saying, perhaps it was Maslow's and then Bloom's taxonomy. And then we said, no, actually you needed to have a good balance of the two together. Yeah. You needed to feed your tummy so that you could feed the soul. And that's what we do in education, right? We inspire so that our children can be inspired to grow, inspired to learn, inspired and innovate. And we do that for educators as well, because they are the first line to our kiddos. And so in COVID, we really had to reach out and make sure that kids had the crayons, that the kids had the devices, that they had the books, that they have access to counselors. And now as we're getting ready to see some of our eighth graders go into high school, again, in a COVID environment, we want to make sure that they have that access and that our teachers are there for them as well. So it has just been an opportunity to do things different and to make sure that everyone has that chance to grow and to be the best version of themselves.
So well said. And I think back to, you know, over the last year, it was often shared on Twitter, I know, and in other communities, that those inequities were always there. COVID just exposed them, right? It just brought them to the surface. Who else would like to speak to this one about your role in your capacity as super? How can you resolve some of these inequities in your district? And what have you been about in the last year in that purpose? You
know, if you don't mind, I'll talk a little bit about that. So El Nido Elementary School District is a single school district in a very rural community. So we don't have pharmaceutical, we don't have doctor, we have one local store. And so when you talked about inequities when COVID hit, it could have been disastrous. But I will concentrate on partnerships. We made a significant number of partnerships to be able to get hotspots to our students within 3 weeks. We were able to get a cradle point added to our mobile home park. So kids within the mobile home park, regardless whether they attended Elknight Elementary or went to our local high schools, were able to access that internet. Because our biggest thing for Elknight staff was to ensure that our kids were going to continue to learn throughout this. And our students had never taken home devices. There's no internet. Why would they take home a device was kind of, you know, was a thought. And everything changed within 3 weeks. Everything changed. And it was all because of partnerships. People in local agencies and national agencies and state agencies that were willing to step out of their box to help local school districts. And there's so much to be said about that. It really meant, as a superintendent, I had to call. I had to keep knocking on doors. People laugh at me because they'll say, you know, you just keep going, huh? You just keep asking. And that's right. I will continue to ask because our kids deserve it. Regardless of what is going on, we need to ensure that our kids are learning because ultimately they're our future. And our teachers, the passion that our teachers have and our classified staff to continue to provide is so absolutely heartwarming. It honestly is what drives everything we do because we know that if they want to continue to providing for our kids, then we will continue that fight. And so no door unknocked, no phone call undone. I will continue to do that henceforward. But, you know, the best part about this is, you know, I tend to be the glass half full. I do get down sometimes, but I tend to be the glass half full. And it took COVID for us to understand what we have to do to be able to do what we need to do to get our kids taught. And the most important thing that came out of that is that the passion and resiliency of everyone that's involved for education is highlighted to an extreme. And for that, I will keep doing it. And so I think that needs to be brought up. Yes, inequities were there. Absolutely. And we can highlight those inequities, but the reality is how do you shatter those inequities? That's the real story.
Zandra, what would you add to this conversation?
Well, I wanted to show you this behind me here, the all means all. I mean, that's all about equity in our mission. All of our mission, all of us five see every single child when we're making decisions and our districts. But that's our motto here. All means all, fulfilling the Greenfield guarantee for every child that we serve. And so I'm going to take you to a sad place and I'm going to take you to a happy place. The sad place was in those first few weeks of school when we didn't have Wi-Fi yet. We were deploying all of our devices. I had children who were trying to connect with their teachers that were sitting in a grass field in the library, or they were coming to our school and sitting on the curb trying to make sure that they had the Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. One child doing that was one child too many. Mm-hmm. And so that's when we put every single initiated a all hands on deck to get Wi-Fi and a device in every single kid's hand, because all means all. We did Google Maps and we pinpoint every address. We parked school buses on every single corner of Greenfield to ensure that none of our children had to worry about leaving their home for having to access the internet or the connectivity. So definitely COVID really presented the inequities or unveiled and exposed the inequities that existed within our communities throughout the states and throughout our union. But I will say this, through all of that, I'll take you now to the happy place. We're very similar to Lori because that all hands on deck, all means all. They knew that, okay, the boss is coming around. She's going to make sure she's going to ask us again, how many kids are online? How many kids are online? So they were like so into like overdrive. And so we are also so proud that within those 2 weeks of school, we had everyone online, every single kid had a book, and every kid, every teacher was connecting with them on Zoom, and our classified staff. Another shout out to our support, mm-hmm. our Trish, our yard duty supervisors, our instructional aides, our, you know, just campus supervisors, all of them were also getting a Chromebook or an iPad and logging on with kids to check on them. So all of that inequity to ensure that we fulfilling that all means all was everyone together. And so it was a really an easy thing to do because everyone just really loves our kids. And this is our story in Greenfield, but this is the same story that all of my sister soups here on this stage have because of the people that
we have brought together in our families. And I don't call them staff. I don't call them employees. I call them Greenfield staff family, because we're a family working together to serve the greater community.
That's beautiful. I'm going to call it now. I think the five of you need to write a book after this is all said and done.
Tim, Rebecca, may I add just a comment there as well?
Yeah, of course.
I think broadband, the digital divide of broadband access is something that we do need to continue to push for at the federal, at the state, at the local level. And just like my sister superintendents mentioned, that was huge. We are going to also give you this happy story in the sense that now we're moving toward broadband access for families that through a partnership with private funding, public funding, and internet companies, where we are providing internet essentials so that we are not having to rely so much on hotspots that are unreliable and not as easy, but families can have internet at home. Mm-hmm. And that's the piece that I feel is the next step as communities, so that not just the students, the families can also stay connected, can also be engaged in the process of schools. The other piece that I'm really proud of our staff is that they do home visits. And every week, students that are disengaged or there's a concern for whatever reason, teachers are telling us, you know, we gotta go visit. They get in the car, they go visit. And I think our families are so appreciative of that effort. And we are becoming more connected as a community because of that. And lastly, our teachers now are really doing more mindfulness, more of those social, emotional, and the regulation pieces that as communities of color and those experiencing poverty, we know that they tend to be the most regulated in society. And the way to move beyond and the way to disrupt that is to learn self-management, the self-awareness, and self-regulation, all of the social, emotional learning skills. So I'm just so proud of our staff and our teachers and everyone that is just really being more connected to our community.
Those stories of home visits are truly remarkable, just the lengths that people have gone to make sure every family is connected. And as we round this out, thinking about equity and Rebecca's comments about broadband, do you feel like it is time to move into a situation where states make broadband access simply mandatory and universal?
Absolutely. I think that broadband is a public utility just like anything else. As we get back to quote unquote normal, one of the most important pieces we can do for equity and in general is to look at what wasn't working, what we need to keep that we've learned through the era of COVID, and broadband is one of them. We need to move towards it being a public utility and every person, there's no excuse why there are people in the United States that do not have access to affordable or free broadband.
Awesome. Well, I thought you might say that, but I know for sure in distance learning, that has been one of the great inequities. And it would be awesome for, I mean, God help us, hopefully no future pandemics, right? But for other situations, you mentioned connecting families and communities. It just seems like a no-brainer. I want to keep this going, and I don't want to spend too much time on the negatives. I know you've had a ton of adversity to work with, but aside from everything we've covered, has there been another challenge? And maybe not, but I have a feeling the list is probably long for all of you. Is there something that might be encouraging or insightful to share with our audience today about something that you've been working through in the past year? Angelica, back to you on this one.
I think the biggest challenge outside of the pandemic has been just another piece that exacerbated kind of issues that already existed, and that a lack of coordination at the local, regional, state, and federal level. Yeah. It's taken us 12 months, and we're just now getting really good coordination. And as superintendents, all of us are super proactive, and we know that you have to plan for every contingency, think about unintended consequences of those decisions, and plan for contingencies of those. And yet, I think that was probably the biggest challenge. I think you've already heard how we overcame that. We didn't wait for others to come and help us. save our communities, we had to do it ourselves. We banded together. We created kind of consortiums across. We really listened. And, I'm sure it's the same case with my sisters here that we brought in the voices, our student voices, our teacher voices, our parent voices, our classified, our management. And we knew in our community what was best for our community. And we came together to create that plan. And so I think that while we had some challenges of kind of disorganization on a larger scale, it brought us closer together. And we now know that we're not going to wait for someone to come and save us, because that's not going to happen. Instead, we've created the systems in place to make sure that we're taking care of the students and the community in our care. So that definitely has shown that we need to do it ourselves.
Yeah. Anyone else? Is there a particular challenge that you face that maybe makes for a good story or again, might provide some insight to other educational leaders across the country right now?
I would add that the only thing that really comes to mind is funding. You know, the larger the school, the more funding. And so funding really means something when you have a smaller district, with our numbers not being significantly large enough to get these huge monies. We got them, we received them, but it took COVID to receive them. And so that is the biggest challenge, is not having that prior to. So we had to get to this point to be able to receive them. Very welcome, very appreciative, but just the idea of, you know, funding being looked at in a different manner.
Well, hopefully some of the 1.9 trillion on its way, it will trickle down into your districts as well. Let's keep it moving into something that came up earlier in the comments, which is this question of wellness and work-life balance. Ladies, I'm sure it's been a nightmarish year. Let's be real. You've put in incredible hours. I know Maria was up till midnight last night. So let's talk about this myth of work-life balance. What are some of the practices that you've lived by that have kept your fire burning? I mean, you're all smiling this morning. You have so much energy and passion remaining even after this year. How have you kept that fire alive? Maria, maybe we should start with you.
Thank you for that. I think, first of all, you have to have a great support system. So my family, my faith, it keeps me grounded. I have to keep coming back to my values. Why do I do it? And when I can focus on my why, and it gives me that new sense of energy. I get up in the morning and I'm like, yay, I get to do it again. I get to go to work. And I get to face the opportunity that was there last night at midnight. And I think also part of my support system, my balance, first of all, there is no balance. The best balance is that if work is hectic, then hopefully family life is okay. But it should never be that both are hectic at the same time, right? What I love is that a couple of months ago, I started a little more exercise in my life. And I want to thank Zandra for being an important part of that. And my sister circle, Jessica, Vero, Rosa, Pam, Lynn, everyone who has been just so supportive, Rebecca, everyone here who was supportive in adding that layer of, you need exercise, you need something that will take you out of your headspace and will give you an opportunity to really just kind of get that release and build up strength in a different way, and then come back and allow you to tackle the challenges that are there. And so now I say strong legs, strong heart. And it used to be I couldn't even get through a mile. Like I could not even run a mile. And I could walk a mile with my dogs, with my beautiful dogs. I have a beautiful lab that's about 80 pounds. But the poor dog has a bum knee. And so he doesn't do a whole lot. But now I can run 5 miles. And I did that through the support of beautiful people who every week were there supporting me when I did a mile and a half. When I, I like to say I run cute. It's not that aggressive. It's that fast. But I think having an opportunity to really do something to take care of yourself, take care of your physical self so that you can give more. And that's important to have.
Yeah.
Exercise is such an interesting one. We all know the power of it and echo everything you said. It's tough to encourage some of our friends and colleagues to get into exercise because it is that time commitment. And sometimes people think about getting over to the gym. I like how you talked about just walking your dog or, you know, getting outside. So it doesn't always have to be a massive sort of isolated event, but let's talk about other rhythms and practices, strategies. Lori, what are one of your go-to sources of energy and revitalization over this past year?
Well, I echo Maria 100%. You know, my family is absolutely supportive, whether it's my husband or my children or my mom and dad. You know, my mom really keeps it real. I go over and, you know, she hands me the broom, go sweep the house. And so reminds you of the fact that who you are, right? And I love that. But when it comes to exercise, just like I have my sister circle of superintendents and then my sister circle of other administrators that just, you know, help me along the way. I also have a coach. And my exercise sister circle, I would call it, that are amazing. And she has really allowed me to learn to the importance of self-care. So I do strength training twice a week, and I do cardio 3 times a week, and yoga as well. So I really ensure self-care for myself, because you have to be able to be 100% up here and here to be able to lead. And I, you know, one thing that I do is I tell my staff that it's important to do self-care. And but I wasn't doing it for myself. And one day I woke up and said, "Ooh, you know what? And you need to do that." And so I drive a lot. You know, it takes me about 1 hour and 10 to get to work. So 3 hours, you know, approximately 3 hours on the road. So I wake up very early in the morning, and I do my strength training or my spin in the morning. And then Saturdays, today I missed it, but my running buddies missed me this morning. But we run up to 5 to 6 miles in the morning. They're pushing me on Saturdays to run a little more. And tomorrow we're going on a hike. And so it is about getting out there, getting that fresh air. It really makes a difference for your mindset. And that's the most important thing. But yeah, and as you get a little bit older, strength training has to take over the cardio. So you've got to make sure you get that going. So I love TRX, and give me some spin. I love to get on that bike. So yes. So yes, exercise is important.
Wow, you've got an incredible routine and rhythm set up through your week. I am envious. Zandra, what does that look like for you? We've been parking on exercise. We can talk about other things too. What's been your secret?
Just to lay down and go to sleep, honestly.
Sleep is important.
While they're running, I am sleeping on the couch. No, just kidding. I do want to say, the balance with the accountability piece with exercise has been huge. And what my sister Maria and my sister Lori echoed was, I got to give a shout out to some of the people here too for At Fit Leaders and Fit Teachers. Those are a couple organizations you can tag on Twitter, and they keep us accountable to doing things like exercising. And I'm going to tell you right now, when I get home today, I'm going to have to run a 5K because I promised Saturday's the 5K day. So I'm going to do it because I'm accountable to myself, and also making sure that I can lead with that head and that heart, like Sister Lori said, because our kids deserve it, right? But they need a balanced leader. They need a balanced teacher. They need people who can, like, not always just grind, but also take a moment to pause and to breathe. And so in our district, one of the things that we did, just not for me, but for everyone, was Wellness Wednesdays. And so every Wednesday since the pandemic, we closed back in, you know, March 13th, every single Wednesday, we've been doing something for staff. So our staff family comes together. We do yoga. We listen to music. We do a little strength training. We cook. We do cooking class. We read books together. So all of those things just kind of embed it into the organization. But several people here that are watching, like you said, Rosalba, Jessica, Veronica, Santiago, Acel, all of those people are part of our accountability team, so that if we're, like, really tired after a day, but you know that you need that balance,
that extra little walk or that extra little jog is going to help us stay grounded. And so just want to thank our brothers and our sisters for keeping that balance and helping us stay balanced.
One of you made the point that sometimes self-care feels indulgent, right? Like I need to serve all these other people and constituents, and you have many of those. But when you invest that time in exercise and wellness, it really does make you, it increases your capacity to serve and to serve better. And Lori spoke to that. You've got to make sure the body is working well before your mind can. Rebecca, we heard about books briefly from Zandra. What else is in your arsenal of wellness strategies?
You know, and I just have to tell you, I'm always inspired by the amazing activity and energy from Zandra, Maria, Lori. They really do inspire me too. I'm going to do more. But I think one of those work-life integrations is really knowing yourself, knowing your body, knowing what your body needs. And I tend to call it find what will nourish your soul. Mm-hmm. And that could be connecting with nature. It can be taking photographs. It can really be also napping. And rest is restorative. And I think they know that I tend to really talk about rest. As leaders, we need to prioritize rest for our communities as well and not be always busy or overproductive. I happen to be before the pandemic, I am a registered certified yoga teacher and mindfulness practitioner. And of course, I'm not doing as much yoga lately with trying to lead in these times, but the mindfulness piece, the meditation, the loving kindness meditations in particular really helped me. And being very mindful of my breath awareness exercises and being able to also just connect deeper with where does it feel in my body? Where is it that I need to do? What movement is necessary to release that stress or just that self-awareness? So I would say that mindfulness piece and in particular, loving kindness meditations and connecting with others and such as my sister circle have been my self-care practices lately.
Love that. Loving kindness. That just captures a lot, doesn't it? And, you know, I've been thinking when you post and share and connect all of these activities in your communities and on social media, I would think that people in your positions of authority and responsibility, I mean, maybe have doubts about people, you know, like, why is she out doing this or that? But I hope that you are encouraged by just the power and the influence of the modeling practices that you are giving your community. Like, we all need to be doing this, no matter where we find ourselves in the chain of command. Angelica, wrap up this round. What are your practices? What are your go-tos?
So it is true that work-life balance is a myth. Dr. Darlene Robles told me that a long time ago. Whoever told you that there's a work-life balance in leadership lied to you. Get over it. I think that's probably one is actually having mentors and people that you can talk to. My husband's really big on, okay, you can have a 30-second pity party. Now you get over it. You're like, okay. But for us, for me, very similar. It's getting out. I like being outside. So getting outside and walking and trying to integrate family into some of the work events to bring them both together and to provide some balance. So if you have to be at work, if you have to do duty, if you're doing something late in the evening, why not bring your family along to go watch the play or to watch the basketball game or the softball game? And so that's always kind of been a way for me. It doesn't feel like work. It feels like it's something that we're doing, you know, as a family. And so I think that that's also important. But I agree with everything that they're saying. Sleeping, we need to make sure that we get enough rest so that we can be coherent in the morning and help people. Just like on the airplane, right? You have to make sure that you have the oxygen first so that then you can help others. The mindfulness piece is huge. Whatever it takes. Sometimes for me, it's just being away for 30 minutes. When I'm done at the end of the day, I'd rather either go outside or just go to the room or just kind of, I need a little bit of time of nothing. So it's finding whatever works for you so that you can continue giving your all without burning yourself out. Because if you're not in a good place, whether it's physically or mentally, even spiritually, you can't serve the way our children deserve the leadership that they need. So I agree 100% with all my sisters.
Thank you so much. Wow, that did my heart a lot of good, and I'm going to enjoy listening to that round again. Absolutely. Well, we are coming to the end of our time, and I know yours is valuable, so I want to go to two more questions. These will have to be sort of lightning rounds, but first of all, who are the voices and influences that inspire you on a daily or weekly basis? I know you'll want to name 10 people and not leave anyone out, but let's try to keep this one as brief as we can. I need to say a shout out to Mr. Adam Welcome there, also in California, who was sort of the catalyst for getting this going. And his book, Kids Deserve It, has sort of, that title has sort of come up in our conversation. Angelica, back to you. Who is one of your sources of inspiration?
It's kids. I spend 2 days a week, whatever district I'm in, I spend 2 days a week out in schools. And I ask kids how they're doing, what they're doing, what did they learn, what was the best thing that's happened to them that day. And that they are who inspire me, because I believe that I exist to serve them.
All right, Rebecca.
You know, I have to tell you that 50 podcast, which just launched, is an incredible source of inspiration. They are compiling. They're a group of, my Calza Familia, Laura Solis and Sal Olguin, who are compiling stories of leadership, mentoring, courage, inspiration through the lens of the rich and diverse Latinx experience. So they're talking to retired superintendents that just, you know, were the trailblazers in our times and that opened the doors for people like me to follow in their footsteps, but also just amazing inspiration. So please join 50 once in a while.
All right. Okay. Shout out. And I'll have to look up that URL and I'll try to get that in the show notes. Zandra, over to you.
So I'm going to echo kids inspire me and definitely our familia. I'm going to say two people that inspire me real quickly, and that is my grandparents, my family, our roots, our ancestors that came from other countries just to come for a better life. So they inspire me every day, and I never forget how people struggled for me to be in this position. And that's like forever. But I will also say my family. My kids and my husband that support me to do this work inspire me all the time. And in fact, tonight I'm staying up till 2 a.m. because it's movie night. So just so you know, that's what I do for my kids. So I give my life to my job. But on the weekends, my kids have me 1,000%.
All right. Well, that's beautiful. I hope you do get a bit of a sleep in tomorrow. Lori, who's your inspiration?
I echo my sisters here, kids, familia, my parents, my husband, my children as well. But I'm also going to say educators. Educators inspire me because it takes so much to get our students ahead. And it's that consistent fight and drive for excellence and that consistent fight and drive for providing for our students. And so I may be sitting here as superintendent, but I'm a teacher. And I never forget where I came from and my roots. Mm-hmm. And so for me, educators, we are all educators. As a parent, we're an educator. We're consistently there. And so I'm inspired every day because it takes a lot for each one of us to do what we do for our children. So absolutely, educators.
Thank you so much. And earlier in the broadcast, we heard we're lifelong learners. You model that so well. Thank you to the five of you. Maria.
So I'd like to echo, sorry, that's the dog in the background. So I'd like to echo what they're saying as well, and the voices in the field, the children, the educators, the families inspire me. But for me, it comes down to my mom. So my mom left Mexico with two daughters in the late 70s, and her passion was they will have opportunity in California. Public education will give my daughters opportunity, and it has changed our trajectory. And I hope to do the same for the community that I serve. So I am inspired daily by my mom. She is the wind beneath my wings, and I never forget that.
That's beautiful. A great note to end on. Before we say goodbye, let people know how they can reach out to you. One of you mentioned connecting on Twitter. You're obviously modeling what it is to be a connected educator and the power found there. We've got your Twitter handle there, but if you could read it aloud for our podcast listeners, that would be great. And of course, let us know if there's anywhere else we should be going to connect with you, Maria.
Hey, so I can be found on Twitter on Superintendent, SUPTMMPOULIN, on Instagram, same handle, and Facebook, Maria Martinez Pullen.
Beautiful. Lori.
And you can contact me at Lori Gonzalez, LoriGonzalez, capital EDU, soon to be one day, Dr. Gonzalez. I'm just accepted into USC, so looking forward to start that. But you know what? sister over here and I. Yes. So you can always contact El Nido Elementary School District. I love to mentor. I love to help. So please reach out. That is also something that's near and dear to my heart. So absolutely, anyone that needs anything, please get a hold of me.
All right, Zandra.
All right. So right there, you see my Twitter handle at ZJ Galvan. On Instagram, it's at Zan Galvan. And then on LinkedIn and Facebook, it's just my full name, Zandra Jo Galvan. And so echo what Sister Lori said there. We are actually this group of women. If you message us, we will return your call.
Yep.
If you want to be a superintendent, we will connect you and we will get a group like this to do a mock interview for you. So you
yes.
blow off. So yes. Anyone out there who's interested in being the next superintendent of a district or a high level position, we will respond. So guaranteed.
Wow. Okay. That's a generous offer, Rebecca.
You can find me on Twitter. My name is Rebecca, 1C, J Andrade. And I'm also on Instagram, and that would be superintendent_Andrade. And of course, if you find me anywhere else, I will respond as well.
And Angelica.
On Twitter, AmRamsey13. And on Instagram, it's AngelicaT_13. On LinkedIn and on Facebook, it's Angelica M. Ramsey. And just like everyone else, find us, send us a message, email us. So many people help the five of us get to where we're at. Mm-hmm. It's our responsibility to help those that come behind us. Please know we're here to help you. Please just reach out any way you can.
Well, ladies, thank you so much. I am so honored and so humbled by you sharing your time and insights with my audience today. You are all superintendents on fire, and I look forward to more of your work. I'm so honored to be connected. So until next time, take care and enjoy your runs, your walks with that dog that is ready to go, Maria, and family movie night. Have a wonderful weekend. Take care.
Thank you, Tim.
Thank you.
My name is Tim Cavey, and I'm proud to contribute to the education conversation through the Teachers on Fire podcast. If you enjoyed this roundtable episode, make sure to subscribe to the Teachers on Fire channel on YouTube, where you can interact with me and my guests every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific, 10 a.m. Central, and 11 a.m. Eastern. And if you haven't yet, make sure to connect with me at Teachers on Fire in your favorite social media spaces to catch more from me and hear from amazing educators who are bringing growth and transformation to K-12 education today. When you listen to this content and share your support on any of these social media platforms, you pour fuel on my fire, and that inspires me to continue this important work of amplifying voices and sharing education ideas. Thanks again for listening to this roundtable episode in these challenging times. Take care, share an encouraging message to lift up a colleague, and keep that fire for learning burning bright.